Welcome to a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, Christmas programs from the western side of the dial. Later on, we hear The Six Shooter with Jimmy Stewart and a western Christmas carol. But right now, a well-known story from the Have Gun Will Travel series, from the TV show with Richard Boone to the radio series with John Daner. It's the story, The Hanging Cross, from December 21st, 1958 on CBS.
In all my life, I've only seen a dozen real killers. But I've seen 10,000 people who will sit back and let murder happen. Which is the greater evil? Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of the man called Paladin.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Paladin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Stanford. Pardon me.
Yes?
You dropped these by the desk.
Oh, thank you very much.
The glove that holds a lady's hand holds a world of prettiness.
Really?
Yes. My name is...
I'm not interested in your name. I don't wish to know it. I don't wish to know you. And if I did, this would not be the day, the hour, nor the place.
I quite understand.
Then if you'll kindly release my hand.
Oh, of course.
Again, thank you very much.
Oh, pretty lady, not too impressed with Mr. Paladin.
We are all entitled to mistakes, hey boy.
Oh, yes, but how often?
Seldom the time, the place, and the loved one all together.
And husband make three. Telegram come for you.
Oh.
Answer?
Yes, wire back, have gun, we'll travel. In a way, I was sorry to leave San Francisco just as Christmas was coming on. The shop windows, already frosted, were filled with all those wonderful surprises, which seemed to appear only at the Christmas season. And there was an excitement in the eyes of passers-by, young and old alike. In the air, there was the smell of cookies and cakes and candies. It was a good time to be in San Francisco. And yet the telegram from Colorado Territory left me little choice. It was a long trip and a cold one. As I got closer to my destination, I heard more about the man named Beecher, the man who had hired me. And I didn't like what I heard. Matt Beecher was a hard man, and he ran his cattle empire with an iron fist. It was the day before Christmas when I arrived at the Beecher Ranch.
You got business here, cowboy?
I was told I'd find Matthew Beecher here.
You found him. I pay you $25 a month if I like your work. This is my foreman, Tater. He'll sign you on.
Howdy.
No, I didn't come here to hire on as a hand, Mr. Beecher.
No? What did you come for, then?
My name is Paladin. You may remember this.
Have gun, will travel. So?
Well, you sent me a wire asking my help, something about your boy. As I understand it, he was carried off during the Sioux War 6 years ago.
Well, you're too late, mister. I got him back.
Just a few days ago, Mr. Paladin.
Oh, well, I'm glad everything worked out.
It has. Tater, ride him out to the stage trail. He's going to start back now.
And Mr. Beecher, it's a long trip from San Francisco. I'll take travel expenses for my trouble.
You'll get nothing. Put him off the ranch, Tater.
Mr. Beecher?
What?
Does the boy speak any English?
No, he don't. Why?
You speak any Indian dialect?
No.
Well, don't you want to talk to your son?
You speak the Pawnee dialect?
Some.
All right, Tater. Take him up to the main house. We'll talk about them expenses later.
Yes, sir. Come on, Mr. Paladin. Maybe I better set you straight about something.
What's that?
Well, we ain't too sure the boy is Matt Beecher's son.
Well, he seems sure enough.
Yeah, well, Matt's sure of everything. He found a boy riding off from a small band of Pawnees 3-4 days ago. Matt just says, that's my boy, and takes him.
Huh. What do you think, Tater?
Well, he looks Indian to me. Of course, Robbie was only 2 when the Indians took him. That was when they killed Mrs. Beecher, too. And that nearly finished Matt off when they killed his wife.
Tater, is that you?
Yep. Mr. Paladin, this here's my wife, Morty.
Morty?
Mr. Paladin.
How's the boy today, Morty?
Same as yesterday and the day before.
Is he sick?
Well, not hardly. It's just we got to keep an eye on him every minute or he'll squirt away. Boy! Hey, boy! There he is, Mr. Paladin. About as wild as any animal that I've ever seen.
Poor little thing.
Well, what do you think?
Well, about 8 years old, I should think.
Be about right.
He could be white. If some of that grime were scraped off him, it's hard to say.
Hard to scrape it off, too.
Well, what's he say?
I haven't talked to him yet, Mr. Beecher.
Well, talk to him. I'm paying you.
Kono la te shi. Shishoni, shoni kiburi, kiman.
Shiwa, kalate shishoni kio, tegate.
His name is Chiwa. His father is Kalate, chief of the Pawnees.
You listen to me, boy. I'm your daddy. I'd sell my own soul. I'd give it away before I'd lose you again.
He don't understand you, Mr. Beecher.
Well, he's got to feel something this strong, lingo or no lingo. Now, boy, you listen to me. What's the matter with him?
He's afraid of you.
Miss Beecher! Mr. Beecher!
What do you want?
It's Indians, Mr. Beecher.
Indians.
Pawnees.
Well, what about them?
Well, they're setting up camp.
Where?
They're over on the East Range.
So they finally come for the boy. All right, Tater.
Yes, sir.
Turn the men out. Make sure they all have rifles.
Yes, sir.
Now, wait a minute.
What?
Before you start shooting, why don't you find out for sure if this really is your boy?
I told you before, I know he's my boy.
You want to believe that, but you aren't sure.
All right, Paladin, say it out. What are you asking for?
Time to talk with those Pawnees.
Well, you go talk then, but I'll tell you one thing for sure. No matter what lies they give you, that boy's mine. And if they try to come after him, there'll be the bloodiest massacre you ever seen.
I rode out to the Pawnee camp knowing I had little time and less chance to stop a needless killing. There were squaws, braves, sitting, wandering. They were a hungry people and a lost people. At a tattered teepee, I found Kalete, chief of the Pawnees.
Kalete was once man who greeted white man like brother. Now he wanders, hungry, forgotten like the gray wolf.
I'm sorry. I wondered why Kalete was on this trail.
White man steal children.
Kalate will agree. A man may claim his own son.
Chiwa, my son.
Is he white?
Chiwa, my son.
I ask again, is he white?
Skin is leather bag God made to hold the soul. Color of bag, no matter. He was traded from the Sioux. Our blood has mixed.
But his is white.
He is my son. I take him back.
Kalate, if you take the boy, there'll be killing. This white man has many rifles.
Can rifles kill what has been killed already? Look at my camp. When there is no game, my people starve. We are driven from land and winter is here. But we move no more. We stay here. Soon we take my son.
Hello, Marty.
Hello, Mr. Paladin.
Wow, what's going on inside there?
Oh, everyone's shining up clean. We're going to celebrate Christmas, Mr. Beecher, too.
Mr. Beecher?
Well, I know you won't believe it, but Tater did the trick. Says to Mr. Beecher, maybe the boy will remember Christmas. Ain't that a good one? Indian boy bringing us Christmas. First time since Mr. Beecher lost his wife. Oh, got to find some more mess heat for decorating. We're going to have singing and eating and everything.
Sounds fine, Morty.
Oh,
Paladin. You see the chief?
I talked to him.
What did he say?
He's your son.
I told you he was. You tell them Injuns to get their squaws and their tents off my property?
No.
Why not? You want them all killed?
I want you to understand that Chief Kalata feels that the boy is his son, too, and he feels it very strongly. If you talk to him, I'd be glad to act as interpreter.
The only way I'll talk to him and his flea-bitten braves is with rifle fire.
Listen, Beecher. Chief Kalata is the only father the boy has ever known. You kill him. How are you going to explain that to the boy?
You speak Pawnee. You can explain it.
You're wrong, Mr. Beecher.
Yeah?
I couldn't explain that in any language.
Tater, I said rations, not all these fancy vittles.
Well, it's Christmas, Mr. Beecher.
Now, look. Listen to me, all of you. Listen. If one calf wanders off tonight, we work double tomorrow, even if it is Christmas Day.
All right, boys. The cider's sitting over there just awaiting. You can't get no stouter, so get to it.
Morty, what is it?
The boy's gone.
Gone?
They come and took him.
Was it the Pawnees took him?
Yes, sir.
You knew about this, Paladin.
I thought they'd try, but not so soon.
Get your rifles.
Now, just wait a minute. You're always reaching for a rifle. There's no need for rifles. No hurry. The Pawnees aren't going anywhere. They're tired of running.
Preaching from a gunslinger. You just been aching to speak a piece. Well, speak it, Paladin. Talk don't mean nothing. Say anything you want. I'll still have the last say.
Well, I'm far from being a preacher. But I do know something about killing. Now, these Indians, rightly or wrongly, believe the boy is theirs. A few people love children like the Pawnees. Now, the Chief Kalata might have given up the boy. He knows a wealthy rancher could give the boy more than a starving Indian could, and they're starving. Properly treated, he still might give up the boy. On the other hand, these Pawnees can't run anymore. They're tired. But they would rather die here tonight than give up the child to force. It won't be hard to massacre them. They have no guns. All you have to do is stay out of arrow range. And those you only wound, well, someone will have to press a muzzle against their heads and pull a trigger. Now, this is no Christmas message. I haven't even suggested that to a starving man, food may carry more weight than rifles. As Mr. Beecher can tell you, sentiments like peace, like goodwill, and love, and brotherhood, they're just words. Unless you already know what they mean. And if you don't, even if this were a chapel and I were a preacher, such words would do no good.
Well, I ain't got much to say. We're going out to kill some Injuns. One Injun in particular. Anybody that wants can stay here and draw his time, if you think you can find another job. And those who ain't going with me, speak up. Right now. Well, that's the story since the beginning, Mr. Paladin. The belly always wins out.
My dear Watson, with all due respect to Sherlock Holmes, let us establish one fact clearly. There is nothing elementary about the shrewd deductions Eric Severide makes as he analyzes world affairs on CBS Radio. As chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, Mr. Severide has open to him almost every possible source of information. Experience has sharpened his perspective and given him an extraordinary working knowledge of the forces that make history. It's taught him to view each new development in terms of cause and effect. Each Monday through Friday night, as you join Eric Severide on most of these same stations, you'll find his news analysis remarkably free of snap judgments and predetermined conclusions. You'll discover, too, that his carefully considered appraisals of the news not only contain real clues as to what is going on in the world, but also they make the news as exciting as any Arthur Conan Doyle story.
Beecher's men spilled out of the doorway of the main house to change clothes and get their rifles. I slipped out the back way and, taking the first horse I saw, headed for the Indian camp. Somehow, I had to keep Matt Beecher from starting a bloodbath he might not be able to stop. Even as Kalati and I talked, I knew there were horses moving in the darkness beyond the Indians' fires. Beecher's horses.
You are a wise man, my son. But we stay.
A man without a gun still might run.
No place to run. I have forgotten how to kill, but not how to die.
But what good does this do the boy?
Could he take another father after this?
We got the camp surrounded. You want to explain that to the chief, Paladin?
He knows it.
You going to stand with them instead of with your own people? I asked you a question.
I heard you. Hold your fire, boys. That's Morty.
Women, what are they doing here?
Mr. Paladin!
Over here, Morty.
We got food and things for them Indians. There's 15 or 20 of us. Is it all right to come in there?
It's the most all right thing in the world, Morty. Come on.
All right, lady. Get your basket and get
it. What is?
Call your squaws, chief. Call your children. Call the boy. They're bringing food and gifts for your people.
Shiva, Hulange, Hunemo.
Well, they don't look very friendly, Mr. Paladin.
I guess you don't look very friendly to them.
What do we say?
Oh, I'd suggest you try Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas?
To Christmas, Merry.
Morty, this is Kalati. He's the chief of the Pawnees.
How do you do? I only got one pair of hands. Here, you take this basket.
Hold on there, Morty. I'm with you.
Hello, Tater.
Hello, Mr. Paladin.
Come in too, Mr. Paladin.
Well, Pete.
Now, what Beecher's doing is wrong, and I don't care if I do get fired.
Well, look, Mr. Paladin, all the men are coming in.
Why, Morty, you ain't rightly dressed for riding.
Well, lady, none of us are trying to change, but you sure don't have to.
Well, Chief, there'll be no bloodletting tonight.
Christmas?
That's right. They call it Christmas. It's a time of the year when people pretend there is no evil in the world.
Yeah, I like.
Everybody likes. What about the boy, Chief? His name is Robbie Beecher. His skin is white. Chief?
My boy.
His boy, Chief. You can return the seed to the plant that bore it. He can't take it, nor can I, nor can anyone.
I talk to boy.
I'll talk to his father.
Hold it, Paladin. Right there.
He'll give you the boy, Beecher.
What?
You can take him home tonight. The chief is talking to him now, telling him that you're his father.
I'll kill you, Paladin, if this is some kind of way of getting back at me. When do I get my boy?
I haven't been paid yet. $1,000 cash.
Well, I haven't got it with me.
Well, when can you have it?
Tomorrow?
Then give it to the chief so he can buy some land for himself and his people.
I'll do better than that. I'll give him some land. I feel like I should give something.
It's a good feeling, isn't it?
As a matter of fact, it is.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Beecher.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Paladin.
Good
afternoon, hey boy.
When you come back?
Last night, late. Oh, excuse me.
Oh, no. Wait, not her. You met her once, remember?
I remember. She's always dropping her glove.
Oh, too bad. I eat trouble.
I beg your pardon. You dropped your glove.
Oh, so I did.
May I pick it up?
You may.
Thank you. Allow me to introduce myself?
Well, please do.
My name is Paladin.
My name is Eugenie Meyer, Mr. Paladin.
Oh. There's a princess named Eugenie.
I'd rather hear about that glove that holds a lady's hand.
Holds a world of prettiness?
Yes. I like that beginning better. Is there more?
Oh, there's a great deal more, I assure you. But one question. Why the change of heart?
Well, it's more a change of mind. The change of heart can come later.
But why? You were very confident in your rejection the last time we met.
Well, you were very confident of yourself, Mr. Paladin. Christmas seems to have humbled you and me.
Then we're both very fortunate. Now we can meet.
Yes.
Gun Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonnell and stars John Daner as Paladin with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Gene Roddenberry and adapted for radio by John Dawson. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin, Jess Kirkpatrick, Roy Woods, Richard Beals, Ann Morrison, and Virginia Christine. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel on Tuned to Yesterday from December 21st, 1958 on CBS. The story by Gene Roddenberry, The Hanging Cross, was seen on television exactly a year earlier, on December 21st, 1957. It's a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now The Six Shooter, starring Jimmy Stewart from NBC from December 20th, 1953, modeling the famous holiday story by Charles Dickens. It's a Western Christmas carol.
Here's a last-minute Christmas shopping suggestion.
Jingle bells, bells of NBC. Oh, what joy to cook and bake while listening merrily. Pots and pans, sink and stove, work goes easily. Kitchens ring with happy chimes when tuned to NBC.
What will you hear in your kitchen after Christmas? Bacon sizzling, coffee perking, dishes clinking, and, if you're lucky, a new sound. NBC radio listening on that new set. The perfect gift to lighten Mother's long hours in the kitchen.
Kitchens ring with happy chimes when tuned to NBC.
James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
There was a nip in the air, not a freezing, biting, angry nip, but a sort of tingle that made the morning stars shimmer and swung them out of their orbits a little closer to the earth. Oh, it was a winter nip, all right, but not a hard winter. Not a winter when the cattle would come down from the high places, poking their noses into the ice-encrusted ground. It was a mild winter nip. Mild enough so that the breath of the boy on the pinto turned only a faint gray as he rode toward the campfire where the man was sitting.
Howdy.
Hello, mister. I see your fire. I thought maybe you wouldn't mind if I gave my pony a chance to warm up.
Sure, sure. Make yourself home.
Easy. You heading for Thompson's Corners, mister?
That's right.
I just came from there.
Oh, well, you must have been riding all night.
Just about. You see, I'm running away from home.
Oh, that's so. Wow. Seems kind of a funny thing you'd pick this time of year to run away. So close to Christmas, I mean.
I hate Christmas.
Oh?
It's just for kids, anyhow.
Well...
I heard Aunt Millie say so. Christmas is for children. That's what she said. Johnny's old enough to do without all that fuss and nonsense. I heard her tell Mr. Franklin that.
Oh, you don't live with your folks, huh, Johnny?
No, sir. He died about 8 months ago.
Oh, I see.
Christmas was all right when I was with them. Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Oh, yes.
It just beats me the way folks take Christmas so serious.
Well, I don't know.
Is this getting presents made any difference? As if I really cared about that knife.
Well, is that what you wanted, a pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything. I just wish there wasn't any Christmas, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you aren't the first person to feel that way. It seems to me I remember reading a story once about a fellow who felt the same way about Christmas you do. Just didn't have any use for it.
What happened to him?
Well, I doubt if I can call it to mind after all this time, but as I recollect... Now, mind you, this may not be word for word, but as I recollect, the man that it was about, the one that hated Christmas, that is, well, he was a real skinflint, he was. He just as stingy as they come. His name was, Eben, something like that.
Eben?
Eben, yeah. I'm pretty sure that was it. Well, being so tight-fisted, this fellow Eben, he got to be the richest man in the whole territory.
He owned a ranch?
Oh, sure. Had four of them. Four ranches and store buildings and farms and maybe a bank or two.
He was rich. I'll bet he had a mighty fine ranch house.
No, he didn't have a ranch house. Eben wasn't the sort to spend money on a ranch house unless there was profit in it. He just lived alone in town, had himself a steady room at the hotel. Well, anyway, one night while Eben was sitting in his room having supper, Christmas Eve it was, well, on this particular Christmas Eve, his only kin, a nephew, lived the same town. He stopped by the hotel.
To wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle, and invite you to our place for dinner tomorrow.
Christmas, fiddlesticks. Powder out. I suppose you'd be closing up your livery stable for the occasion.
Why, sure, Uncle Eb.
And just how will the horses know it's Christmas? Answer me that.
Well, if they don't know it, we will. Can I tell Sally to expect you at 3?
You can expect me all you like, but I ain't coming. Not at 3 or any other time. Oh, if you're making so much money, you can afford to be giving parties. Maybe I ought to think about raising the rents on the livery stable.
Oh, now, Uncle Eb.
I'll go and get out of here before I lose my temper. All this nonsense about Christmas. Fiddlesticks. Hold it.
Well, after that, Johnny, the nephew didn't stick around there. He got out of Eben's hotel room with a regular gallop. It wasn't very long before Eben had another visitor. He's a young fella, tall, lanky, not very good at speaking. He... just plain ordinary cowpoke. He was the foreman of the S&M ranch.
Oh, well, it took you long enough to get here. Where have you been? Selling off some of my herd without telling me about it?
No, sir. That day you rode by, I was out in the range hunting strays.
And a good thing I decided to check up on you, too. What's that cabin doing over by Holly Creek? And who are those people staying there?
They're my family. I built the shack for them myself.
I'm not going to have a bunch of nesters in my property. Tear it down.
Well, one of my boys has been sick. I can't afford
that
to rent it.
That ain't my concern. It's up to you to keep your family and what you earn. So see that you get rid of that shack tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh, well. Then you'll have plenty of free time to tear it down. I'll be out the day after to make sure you've done it. Good night.
I wasn't much use in arguing. Foreman knew that. So he put on his hat and shoveled out. Now, Eben was alone again. At least he thought he was alone. The clock on the mantel started striking 8, and that's the time for him to turn in. So he put on his flannel nightshirt and reached for the kerosene lamp to set it on the stool beside the bed, and right about then, the strangest thing happened.
What in tarnation?
Johnny, old Eben
saw a man's face looking right at him from inside that lamp. Eyes and hair, a nose and mouth, whiskers, all just as plain as day.
Jake!
It was old Jake, Evan's partner. There wasn't any mistake about it at all. It was Jake right to a T. Well, Evan sure didn't like the idea of having Jake right in the same room with him. You see, Jake had been dead for over 7 years. Not that Evan really believed in ghosts or haunts or anything like that. He told himself he'd just imagining all this.
I got to get a hold of myself.
He put out his hand to turn down the wick, but all of a sudden his fingers started trembling. There was Jake again, across the room this time, standing right by the bureau.
No!
And when the lamp slipped out of Evan's hand, the room didn't get dark at all. Jake seemed to be surrounded by a splotch of bright yellow light, and he was wearing the same boots and breeches and leather jacket that he'd had on 7 years ago, the day he died. But as Jake came closer, Evan could see that he was wearing something else. A small leather saddle strapped across his back, and hanging down from it were two saddlebags stuffed so full of gold nuggets and mortgage papers and land grants that Jake could hardly drag him across the floor.
You recognize me, Evan?
Oh, sure, Jake. Why, sure, I'd never forget you, but what are you doing here? And why are you wearing that getup?
Always thinking about land and money. Always scheming and conniving. That's why I wear it. And that's why I've come to warn you, Evan. The saddle you're fixing up for yourself is even heavier than mine.
But I don't know what you mean, Jake. I ain't done no wrong. I ain't never done folks no wrong.
Have you ever done them any good? Any good at all?
Oh, why, sure. I've worked hard. I've saved my money. I ain't been a burden on anybody. Why, you should see our ranches, Jake. Oh, the way I've built them up.
I have seen them many times. And I've seen a lot more than that, too. That's my punishment. To spend eternity traveling around, seeing mankind with its trials and tribulations, with its joys and hopes.
Is that so terrible?
Oh, Evan, to watch them and not be able to help them. You'll find out how terrible it is. You'll find out.
Well, there must be some way of avoiding this. You always were my friend. Jake, tell me what to do.
Evan, you've got to find out for yourself.
But how?
Tonight, at 1 o'clock, you'll be haunted by a ghost.
Another ghost?
Pay him heed, Evan. Pay him some heed.
Hey, wait, Jake. Don't leave me without it. Jake.
The yellow light sort of faded away and the ghost was gone. It was just like he hadn't even been there. And then something caught the corner of Evan's eye. A little glimmer on the floor. And he bent over to pick it up.
A gold nugget. Oh, now where on earth did he...
And then he remembered. Those saddlebags of Jake's, they'd been filled clear to the brim with gold nuggets.
We're interrupting our story for only a moment, and only to tell you, our unseen audience, that you have helped more than you may realize to make this a very Merry Christmas for all of us on this program. Your being with us each week, your many kind letters, have told us that all the work that goes into bringing you the Six Shooter has not been in vain, and we're grateful. So, friends, from all of us, Jimmy Stewart and the cast, our writer, our director, engineers, and sound technicians, our best wishes for a happy holiday season. Oh, yes, and before I forget it, beginning December 31st, the Six Shooter will be on the air on Thursdays instead of Sundays. That's beginning Thursday the 31st. The time of broadcast will be listed in your local newspaper. Thank you. Now, Act Two of the Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponson.
Jake's ghost really had been there, huh, mister?
Yeah, I just wasn't any doubt about it, Johnny.
Oh, what happened then? Did the other spook turn up? The one Jake said was coming to see Evan?
Oh, sure, Johnny, sure, yeah. He was right on time, too. Evan was lying in bed,
wide awake, of course. He hadn't been able to do much sleep. I was too scared, you know. It was kind of peculiar. Eben was half scared the ghost would come and half scared he wouldn't, you see. But before the sound of the clock had died away, there he was. He's sitting in Eben's rocking chair like he'd been there all night long. And this ghost was a young fella. Oh, maybe 18, 19. All dooted up the way young bucks like to dress. You know, fancy chaps and checkered shirt and a red bandana tied around his neck.
Howdy, Eben. Reckon you've been expecting me.
Yeah, well, I guess so.
You ready to take a little trip?
Where to?
Back. Way back through the years.
Oh, but how can I go with you?
It's real easy. You see, I'm the ghost of Christmas past. Your past, Eben. Let's shove off.
The next thing Eben knew, he and that ghost were standing out on a snow-covered prairie. There was a circle of covered wagons in front of them, and the people from the wagons were gathered together listening to a tall, white-bearded man. He was reading the Bible.
Great joy, which will be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto
and
you.
The ghost turned and pointed to a boy sitting away from the others on the tailboard of one of the wagons. Small boy, oh, about 10 years old, with hollow cheeks and his eyes all red from crying.
Oh no.
It was Eben himself on a Christmas day a long, long time ago. Not a very happy Christmas either. It was only a week since the oxen had stampeded and his ma had been killed when she fell from the wagon. His pa had died with an Apache arrow in his chest.
No, I don't want to look at him anymore. Can't you show me another Christmas?
Well, it was no sooner said than done. Now Eben and the ghost were in a bunkhouse. And Eben saw himself again. Oh, he's 10 years older than the boy on the prairie, but he was lying on a blanket staring up in the ceiling. And then his pal, Jay, came running in, all out of breath.
Come on, Eb. Get a clean shirt on. We got us an invite to a party.
Huh?
Yeah, the boss is throwing a big shindig. He says he'll fire us if we don't show up.
Eben couldn't help remembering that party. Oh, the roast beef and the baked ham and square dancing and the pretty girls in their calico. He couldn't help saying out loud to the ghost.
Oh, dear. How I wish I...
What was that, Eben?
Nothing, Mr. Spirit. Nothing. I was just remembering how I treated my foreman today. That's all.
After that, the ghost took Eben to three or four more of his old Christmases. And none of them were very happy. Especially that Christmas when the young schoolmarm, sitting on the horsehair sofa, had unwrapped the tiny box Eben gave her and then handed it back to him.
It's a lovely ring, Eben. But I can't wear it.
Well, you're not courting somebody else.
No, Eben. But you are. You're courting something else.
Bill.
Land and money, cattle, profits. They mean more to you than I ever would. I'm sorry.
Mr. Ghost, no more of the past. Please, I've seen enough. A man wants to forget.
Sure, Eben. Whatever you say.
And before Eben could blink his eyes, he was right back in the hotel room. But once he got there, he blinked real hard because all of a sudden the ghost was becoming a different person. He was getting fatter and his stomach popped out 2 or 3 inches and a few wrinkles creased his cheeks. And finally his chaps turned into a shiny blue serge suit with a heavy gold chain dangling across the vest.
Hey, well, what's happened to you? Why are you so different now?
You seem to be getting tired of the past, so I thought we might take a gander at the present, if you've got no objection.
Well, the hotel room just melted away, and Eben was looking at that cabin his foreman had built on Holly Creek. Well, that cabin sure was crowded. Oh, there must have been 5 or 6 children, all helping their mother get the Christmas dinner, all laughing and talking, as busy as summer colds. But when their father came in, he had a long face and a tired mouth. And his wife looked up and wanted to know what was troubling him.
Oh, I was just thinking about old Eben.
That's not a very pleasant thought for Christmas, Bob. By the way, what did he want with you yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. Well, let's get on with dinner. Sit down, everybody. Now, where's my Jim, huh? Well, I guess we're just going to have to eat.
And Bob looked all around the room. He was pretending he didn't see the little fellow in the corner. The boy with an iron brace on his leg and a wooden crutch propped up against the wall. But little Tim, he wasn't going to be ignored.
Here I am.
So Bob picked him up and carried him over to the table.
God bless this food, this house, and us and our friends. Even old Evan. Amen.
The family found that part about Evan a little hard to swallow, but they finally managed, and Tim was the last one to chime in.
God bless us, everyone.
Evan didn't want to watch what was going on in that cabin any longer, but the next place the ghost showed him wasn't much easier on him. There was a big party going on at his nephew's house back in the livery stable. And one of the ladies was blindfolded, you see, and she was trying to pin the tail onto a donkey. But there was something peculiar about this donkey, about the way it was drawn. It looked more like a person than an animal. Well, Evan recognized who it was supposed to be right off.
You see, folks, I invited Uncle Evan to be with us, but he turned me down flat. So I figured we'd have him here in spirit, if not in the flesh.
Right back in the hotel room again. That's where Evan found himself.
Spirit, you showed me the past and the present. What's left to see?
The future, Evan. The future.
And that's how Evan came to see a Christmas of the future. A cold, brittle Christmas. And there are two men standing on a street corner, and the coat collars turned up so that keep out the snow.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Dead as a doornail. Sure is a Christmas present I never expected. At least whoever handles his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was. Wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
And in a frame house over on the side street in the edge of town, a woman was speaking to her husband.
Funny. To me, he's been dead for years. Well, I haven't even thought of him since I don't know when. And yet, you know, once I was real fond of him. Funny, isn't it?
Ghost! Who are they talking about? Those men on the street. That woman I used to know. Who is it that's dead? Tell me.
And the ghost slowly turned and stretched out a long, thin, bony finger. And there, right at the end of that finger, was a tombstone all covered with weeds. Evan could barely make out the name that was carved on it.
Ebenezer Scrooge. No. What's this? Where am I?
You know what? He was right in his own bed, in his own nightshirt, and the sun was streaming through the frosted windows. But Evan didn't stay there very long, not for very long. He got into his boots and trousers as fast as he could, and he dashed down the stairs, out into the street. Well, you see, the stores being closed gave Evan quite a problem. Well, he just have to make Fuzzy Wagner open the butcher shop up, that's all. Of course, Fuzzy didn't have much choice, seeing as how the shop was located in one of Evan's buildings. And when Evan told him what he wanted, a turkey and a ham, well...
No. I'd better make it two hams and send them out to the cabin on the S&M ranch. And they're not to know that I ordered them. You understand, Fuzzy? Here's the money and a little extra for your trouble.
Well, before Fuzzy could get his jaw shut up again, Evan was on his way, and he headed right straight out to his nephew's house. And Evan was the life of the party, too. Well, the way he carried on, he's laughing and making jokes and telling stories on himself, and he insisted that they use that donkey with his face on it when they played games, you know.
Yes, because that's what I've been all these years, a real four-footed, long-eared donkey.
And the next morning, though, that's what Evan enjoyed the most. He was up bright and early, and
hitched the team to the buckboard and drove out to the S&M, hurrying the horses all the way.
Come on, Bess. Come on, Martha. Step a little lively.
If he could just get out there before his foreman started tearing down that cabin.
Whoa, whoa, Martha. Whoa, whoa. Yeah. Well, Robert?
Yes, sir?
I see you ain't carried out my orders.
Well, it was Christmas. I just couldn't tell him. I'll do it today.
Oh, this is the last straw. I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fella.
Oh, but please,
that
don't...
cabin's coming down and no buts about it. And then we're building a new ranch house in this place. Big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob. Even if I am a day late. No, not a day. More like half a lifetime. But Merry Christmas anyway. And as your son says, God bless everyone.
Well, that's the way things worked out, Johnny, more or less.
That's a fine story, mister. Real fine. I reckon I know why you told it to me.
How's that?
So as I'd understand about Christmas and how important it is to do for other people instead of just thinking about yourself.
Well, no. I didn't have that in mind, especially. The story just happened to come into my head, that's all.
Well, maybe if I had to give Aunt Nellie something, a present, maybe. Oh, shucks, what could I give her? I don't have no money.
Well, of course, there are lots of things don't cost a penny. Not a single red cent, you know.
Huh?
Well, now, you... Let's see. Take that little spruce over there. I'd be real easy to cut that down. With a little fixing, maybe a few doodads from around the house. I'll bet you can make a Jim Dandy Christmas tree out of that.
I suppose so, but what good's a tree without something to put under it?
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Johnny... you don't happen to know Jim Bender, do you? In Thompson's Corner and his three daughters?
He's only got two, mister. Sarah and Emily.
Oh, that's so. I was spending Christmas with them. It looks like I'm carrying an extra present. It's a real pretty little red bonnet with feathers on.
I couldn't take it, mister.
Oh, no. I wasn't thinking of giving it to you, Johnny. But I was sort of hoping that you'd show me the trail from here on in. Of course, it would mean you're turning around going back home, but if I was to cause you changing your plans, I'd feel obligated to pay you back some way, you know.
Well,
it would be only fair. Trouble is, I haven't got much money, so if you wouldn't mind accepting the bonnet instead, you'd be doing me a real favor, Johnny.
He looks madder than a wet hen.
Well, there is a resemblance. I'll have to admit that.
Where in tarnation have you been, John Carville? I've been looking high and low for you since dawn.
Well, I just went for a little ride, Aunt Millie, to get us a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlestick.
This gentleman helped me cut it down. I'll just take it inside. Be right back, mister.
If we had any use for a Christmas tree. I suppose he's figuring there'll be a whole lot of presents under it.
No, I don't think so. But just between you and me, I got a hunch there'll be at least one present waiting for somebody.
What are you talking about?
Oh, no, it wouldn't be fair for me to speak out before Christmas. You know that.
You don't mean he's got something for me?
No. You mustn't get too curious so early.
But I thought he didn't like me. I thought he just hated having to live here with an old maid. Oh, I guess I just don't know nothing about kids. Nothing at all. I don't deserve to get...
I think I'd better get moving along. Say goodbye to Johnny for him, will you? And I wonder if you'd give this to him. Tell him the little blade on it's kind of dull, but...
A pocket knife?
Yeah.
Now, how did you know?
So long, man.
Oh, God bless you, mister.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Remember now, beginning December 31st, the six-shooter will be on Thursdays instead of Sundays. We hope you'll join us in our new time. The six-shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. The transcribed story was written by Frank Burt in collaboration with Charles Dickens. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Howard McNear played Scrooge, and special music was by Basil Adlam. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And now, until Thursday the 31st, this is Hal Gibney speaking. Merry Christmas. Tonight, hear Rex Harrison and Anna Lee in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
The Six Shooter on Tuned 2 yesterday from December 20th, 1953 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of Western Christmas shows on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Happy holidays.